Every year, as this time rolls around, I become more and more looking for the adjective, I guess, amazed, impressed, surprised. Because I'm a cradle Catholic. I grew up knowing the story of the crucifixion of Jesus. But I think it's been in the last few years that I have become entranced, that's another good adjective, by the sheer intentionality of, on the part of Jesus, the sheer intentionality with which he approaches his coming crucifixion. Now, allow me to unpack what I mean by the sheer intentionality. Jesus is, as he approaches his death, is not a man caught off guard. This is not a man who was sort of arrested when he least expected it. As a matter of fact, this is a man who, from the very moment that he decides to go back to Jerusalem. And if you remember, when he decides to do that is right after the episode of what's called the Transfiguration. When he goes up to the mountain with his three disciples, Peter, James, and John, and when he goes up there, and he on his way down, he explains to Peter, James, and John that he did this so that when the time comes, they would remember what they had seen. And then as he starts the journey coming down the mountain, he takes his disciples and he says, "Now I must go to Jerusalem, where I will be arrested and crucified." Now, this is a man who knows what's about to happen. So this is not a man who's going to be caught off guard. He knows what's waiting for him. Peter, I always find what Peter does very almost comically endearing. Peter says, "O Lord, may this not happen to you." As I always like to imagine it. You know, if I were going, for example, after Mass, I were going to, say, the parking lot down the street in Target. And there at the parking lot, I was going to be assaulted, beaten up, and killed. I think most of you would say, "Don't go. Don't go." And what would my response be? Well, my response should be, "Thank you so much. Thank you for thinking of me." And yet when Peter says the same thing to Jesus, "Don't go. May this not happen to you," Jesus' response is totally different. Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan. You are thinking like man does, not like God. Now, just analyze that. Because the normal response is, on the part of Jesus, is thank you. But Jesus calls Peter Satan. And Satan is the deceiver. And then he says, you are thinking like man does, not like God. Which begs the question, well, how does God think? How does he think if he wants you to go and face this place that you're going to be tortured? What kind of mind says go and face that? And believe me, lots of people in Christian tradition have asked themselves that question. Why? Why did God the Father allow this? Couldn't he find another way of achieving the salvation? And yet, we see that Jesus is saying, you're thinking like man does. So God's thinking is, go. Face it. And the question still is, why? Why? And so Jesus goes on to Jerusalem, and when he enters Jerusalem, he's received by people with palms. People waving palms and saying, welcome, King of the Jews. He's given the Messiah's welcome. These are the very people who, several days later, will be standing in a crowd calling for his execution. And then, as things begin to heat up, and Jesus knows that it's getting time, it's time for the Passover. Remember what the Passover is. The Passover is a reminder of liberation from slavery that the Jews celebrate every year. And they celebrate that they are freed from the slavery to the Egyptians. So they eat a meal in which a lamb is sacrificed. Now, remember this. Jesus knows what's about to happen. He not only goes to the place, he picked the time. He picked the time. And so the night before he's about to be arrested, it's customary to have the Passover meal. And so he says to his disciples, go and find that room that I'm telling you about, and there we will do our Passover meal. Notice the timing. Again, notice the intentionality. I'm using this word positively. This is totally fabricated. Jesus goes and he celebrates the memorial in which a lamb is killed and is the celebration of the liberation from slavery to the Egyptians. And during that meal, instead of saying anything about the lamb, he takes a piece of bread and he said, this is my body. And then he takes the cup of wine and says, this is my blood, which will be poured out for you. Now I want you to notice what's happening here. He's taking the content of the Passover meal. He is making himself the lamb, and you're supposed to eat the lamb after it's been slaughtered. And so he does that, but not giving the carcass, taking bread and wine. Saying, I am the lamb. He identifies with the lamb. His disciples have no idea what the God's green earth is going on. They have no idea what's happening. And then, to continue this whole image of the intentionality of Jesus, he turns to one of his disciples and he says, Judas, go and do what you have to do. He even sends the guy who's going to betray him, he sends him to do the betrayal. Not a man caught off guard. And after Judas has left, he goes to the very place that Judas knows where he's going to be. Notice he doesn't even pick a different place. He goes to the very place where he knows Judas is about to bring the mob. And then the disciples are still clueless. And he goes off to pray while his disciples sleep. And what does he pray? Father, all things are possible for you. If this cup can pass me by, notice the word cup also having just been said at the Last Supper. This is the cup of my blood. If this cup, what's about to happen to me, can pass me by, please, let it pass me by. But not my will, as you wish. This is not a masochist. This is a man who's doing something he's been told to do. But he doesn't quite want to do it. I don't blame him. He knows what's coming. And he says, but it's your will, Father. So what is the will of the Father? Think it through. Do you think that it was the will of God that Jesus be crucified? I'm not asking you for an answer. Think it. Is it, because he said, your will be done, and then he was crucified. Therefore, was it God's will that Jesus be crucified? The answer is no. So what was God's will? My sense is that God's will was that Jesus not run. Think it. What is the ultimate thing that someone can threaten you with? Taking your life. That's the ultimate thing that someone can threaten you with. And what the Father was saying to Jesus was, if you run, all of humanity is under the threat of death, because ultimately everybody will run if God runs. If God runs in the face of execution, who can blame anybody else from running? And so I think what God the Father was saying is, let them do what they are going to do to you. I don't want it either, but let them. Let them, because I want it known that in humanity, death does not command. That God is greater than death. Not only any death, that God is greater than any torture that you can undergo. You let them do it. And you stand there and you take it. Because I am greater than that. And so it happens. They come and arrest him. They come and they do all kinds of tortures to him. And finally, they crucify him. Always amazing to me. By the way, I kind of recommend when you go home tonight, there's a film being shown called Killing Jesus. And don't look for the fullness of the gospel story there. Bill O'Reilly, who wrote the book, he just said, I wanted to write a book of anything that I could verify as historical. So lots of stuff is missing, but I think it's worthwhile. But think it through. There Jesus allows himself to be taken, tortured, and killed. Now the question that I still ponder, and it came to me this. So what does that mean for us? Because you know, we hear it all the time. Jesus died for you. When I was younger, I didn't get it. What do you mean he died for me? I didn't ask him to do that. He died for me. You see, every one of us owes one death. Every single one of us owes one death. A good friend of mine always says, the last time I checked, the mortality rate in humanity was still holding strong at 100%. You are going to die. And the day you die, what will you hang on to? And I don't know what your death will be like. I don't know what my death will be like. But what will you hang on to? We don't know if it's going to be of a sickness, of some kind of cancer. You might be boarding an airplane and some crazy co-pilot runs it into the ground and you're 16 years old. You might be working in a foreign country to send money home and some guys dressed in black will arrest you, dress you in orange jumpsuits, walk you next to the beach, kneel, make you kneel, and then pull your head back and cut your throat. And as many of those were saying as they were dying, you could hear them invoking the name of Jesus. Jesus, help me. And why was that available? Whether it be on a plane, or whether it be in a cancer ward, or whether it be on a beach getting your head chopped off, or the desert. And why is that available? Because Jesus went through it. Because whenever it comes your time and my time, we know that he, right behind me, went through it. And he is the one that will give you strength. You know, let me tell you, and I'll close with this. Our Christian faith is not pie in the sky. Pie in the sky is helping you to try and deny reality, making you look at life through rose-colored glasses. Our faith is all about a way of looking precisely at reality. It is a way in which God has intervened into our lives and said, I'm not taking away the suffering. And all of us will carry. And Jesus was very clear. Jesus was clear when he said, unless you take up your cross and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. The cross is there. It will be waiting for you whenever it's your time. But you have an example to follow. And he will give you the strength to do it. And so as we begin this Holy Week, I just invite you to enter into the meaning of what's going on here. This is not a calendar week. This is what the Greeks used to call kairos. It is a time in which we remember the dates are not important. But it is a time in which the events of history give us a sense of purpose and a sense of hope. So that when we face our own crosses, we will face it not only with the strength of Jesus, but with the knowledge that on the third day, God reached into the grave after that horrendous grave, suffering, and pulled Jesus back to life, to a new life. And that's the promise. That's why this message of the gospel has survived over 2,000 years, because it's the thing that gives us hope. Death is for real. How you choose to interpret it is up to you. That's one of the great psychiatrists, Viktor Frankl, who used to say, the ultimate human freedom is the ability to choose the outlook that you will have towards your suffering. Jesus has provided one, and one that is full of hope. May God bless each one of us as we begin this Holy Week.